Good afternoon. I really appreciate you all being here. It's such a lovely day out, and you stayed in the session, so I'll try to make this interesting to you all. My name is Chris. I'm a postdoc, as she mentioned, and I'll be covering a bit of a piece of my dissertation research related to, as she mentioned, community violence and culture as it relates with low-income moms in Southeast Louisiana. I have no relationships to disclose, but this was funded by the National Institute of Environmental Health Science, and I do not represent their views necessarily in this case. And I don't want to belabor the point, but I just want to kind of hit a gap. I love how these sessions kind of overlap with the different presenters. But community violence, you know, it's not only a public health threat, not only because of the direct problem, but just what we're finding more and more is that the exposure to sort of violent neighborhoods has drastic psychosocial and physical effects, particularly among children. And what's often the case is that moms are still being tasked with managing the home of those environments, not only when they're pregnant, but even for the small children. In particular, what's concerning is among low-income moms who must not only manage that environment that oftentimes has a greater exposure to the community violence, but at the same time with diminished resources and services. And what we're finding is that there's sort of a very complicated relationship that work done with Kat Thiel and Stacey Drury, looking at that that exposure to violence not only affecting the moms, but then that stress then epigenetically being transferred either to the baby or through the changing in the style of parenting. So it's all very interesting stuff from a public health perspective. In Southeast Louisiana, it's a very interesting topic that obviously here in Chicago and in St. Louis as well, that the New Orleans area, you know, has always kind of had a higher than average murder rates, crime rates, violence rates than the country. But it's really been sort of a post-Katrina narrative that's really kind of grabbed hold of the people of Southeast Louisiana, of that even though, you know, the real data shows that the crime and violence rates are nowhere near what they were in the 90s and 80s, there's this general perception that it's not being tracked and that there really is a greater threat that people aren't realizing. And it's being picked up just through an overwhelming fear. And I think a great example that very similar to what happened with me is that Kaiser Family Foundation did this post-Katrina study where they wanted to kind of get a sense of the fears and hopes about hurricane behavior among people in Southeast Louisiana. And it, actually the report ended up getting overshadowed because all the people wanted to talk about was their fear of safety. And one of the public comments that I read that still kind of sticks with me is them saying that the one connector of people in the region across race, income, education are Saints football and the fear of safety. It's sort of the one thing that any conversation eventually devolves into is this, you know, either how Drew Brees is playing or, you know, how messed up the safety situation is down in New Orleans. So you're really seeing such a salient issue in that area. So the results that I'm covering come from a large study, the GROW study, that was funded through NIEHS following the Gulf oil spill. And particularly, I'm working with what were pregnant women through a larger cohort through the GROW study. They were recruited through six parishes in Southeast Louisiana. They were recruited at the first trimester of what would be their first child, and the larger study followed up with them through the course of their pregnancy until 6 months postpartum and measured them through various psychosocial measurements. And all these women were eligible for the WIC clinic, and if you're not aware, that has certain income and nutritional guidelines. And this study really came about through the larger GROW studies, community advisory board, the recommendations from our community partners who saw a lot of the post-oil spill environmental studies we were developing. And their ask for us was that we want you to separately also look at these environmental threats through the lens of culture. So as the master's doctoral student, I got drafted to go off and learn as much as possible about culture, because really what you often get in public health is that culture is still being used as this proxy of ethnicity or region. It's sort of, oh, culture. That sort of explains everything. And even more so in environmental health studies, culture, if it's ever used, is sort of used as decoration, qualitative decoration of saying, you know, oh, we talked to some people, but here's the real study. It's never really been used, or it's still, you know, slowly creeping to a better incorporation of a true transdisciplinary partnership between those two areas. And that's kind of the small thing I was trying to get at. So based on those inclusion criteria, it shouldn't be a surprise that my population I ended up working with was a very young, 25% under 22. Most lived in the metro region. Most were African American. A significant minority had lacked a high school diploma. More than half of them made less than $10,000. And a lot of them reported, you know, very salient involvement with community violence. A majority of moms or pregnant women had at least some experience with violence. A third of the moms talked a great deal about violence with other moms. Almost a third said that community violence represented this extreme stress in their lives. And one of the great benefits, I'll get to it later on, of partnering with this larger cohort study was their psychosocial measurements that they tracked the moms throughout the pregnancy. And just for simplicity's sake, I wanted to just look at the bookend measurements that you had, the first trimester and the 6 months postpartum measurements. And there are three measures that I was interested in just because of their relationship with culture and behavior. CD risk, which deals with sort of an individual resilience measurement. LADAR, which deals with sort of an optimistic, pessimistic measurement. And Kessler 6, which is more of a clinical measurement of sort of psychological distress among these. And those were sort of the measurements I was using for this analysis. So the first thing we did, explaining why you have an environmental health scientist talking to you about violence, that we, using this cultural method, we wanted to go to the women and get a sense of, okay, what is environment to you? What are the threats in the environment? And I had studies planned about, I was expecting results related to lead, related to oil spills, you know, things like that. And the top responses, violence. Next, drugs in the community, bad drivers in the community. Their other responses were problems with moms. That for, very clearly you can see that what the environment meant to this group of women was sort of a, you know, cumulative environment, not just chemical, not just physical. So what I was very interested in looking at whether there was a cultural model among this at-risk population about how to handle this sort of most salient threat of violence in the community. And we did this first, following a very methodical anthropological approach. We first did this by doing a free list to collect all of the items that would be indicative of this lifestyle of managing community violence. We then took those items that may be describing the topic and asked the larger group of moms to describe a dimension. And that was then sort of basically asking them to rate thinking of other moms in their community, how important some of those behaviors were. We also had them give us some sources of support and information. And we had them rank according to other moms in their community, how likely would they turn to these sources. We then used an analytical methodology called cultural consensus analysis, which really is just sort of a flipped factor analysis that examines patterns of agreement. And just for this presentation, it creates three outputs that are very interesting from a public health perspective. One, it sees if the people are thinking about the topic in a statistically similar way that we could say there is a cultural model among the population. It looks at the patterns of agreement to come up with some sort of a representation of a culturally correct answer to the set of responses you give them. And then using those weighted responses, you can then calculate how well each individual matches their cultural model. So in a sense, they call it cultural competence. So how well they're in touch with what the culture is saying. So long and short, we did all that. We gave it to a larger sample of moms. And I put up some of the statistical results. But just for layman's terms, it was an incredibly highly shared culture. And what was most surprising, going against some of my original hypotheses, there was really no difference between race, ethnicity, region, education, really anything I thought it was going to be. You have across a very diverse sample of low-income moms an extremely well-shared idea about the appropriate way to respond to community violence. And really the only things that popped up, not only just knowledge, but just sort of a subcultural difference, was when I accounted for the mom's psychosocial health at baseline. And they all kind of went together, essentially showing that moms with better psychosocial health thought of community violence in one way, differently than the moms with worse psychosocial health during their pregnancy. So what this model actually meant, these are some of the behaviors they listed, and the top responses extremely important across the culture were being extra cautious with the family, asking authorities for help, then down the line to very important items such as working with others, moving to a safer community, watching the news. And then some things moderately important but still endorsed in the model were things like keeping a gun in the house, staying inside as much as possible. We then asked sort of the sources of support and information, and no real surprises. Police were seen as an extremely likely source of support among the moms, then TV news, local government leaders, family and friends, so on and so forth. However, we're in public health, and any health behavior person will tell you there's a big difference between knowing the right answer and doing the right answer. So we followed up with these moms, and we gave them these same sort of behaviors and sources of support and asked not what they think other moms are doing, well, but what are they actually doing? And again, there was really no big difference across race, ethnicity, region, things like that. And I broke it down. This is really kind of crude, so I'm just showing the unadjusted odds ratio. But based on each specific behavior, what popped up were, again, the psychosocial measures of the mom. So I did basic two-by-two tables. So kind of, you know, shockingly, the moms that had were considered at risk psychologically with a Kessler 6 score were more than three times more likely to say that they wanted to keep, they thought it was important for them to keep a gun in their house. And other things you see, such as the lot R, which means that they kind of had more higher general optimism. They were more likely to ask for authorities for help. They were more likely to work with others in the community. And then another thing that kind of popped up in a different direction were whether or not they believed that the protection of the family was the responsibility of the government. And that the moms who believed that, that they thought it was the government's responsibility, were just across the board less engaged. They were less likely to ask authorities for help. They were less likely to work with others in the community. They were less likely to rely on government services, less likely to rely on community leaders and the police. So again, this is sort of a crude outline. But what I then did was sort of, I created an index, and this is developed by anthropologists in the University of Alabama, where if we take all of the responses in this cultural model and we weight each response based on the cultural model, or the rating on the cultural model, so you sort of weight how important it is to the moms, and then you add it up, you get sort of an index score, that what he calls cultural consonance, essentially showing the approximate, or how well each mom approximate in their life what is a widely shared model of behavior in their own life. And so I, you know, it creates this index score. And the first thing I wanted to know is what predicts this index score of how well they approximate this extremely well-shared model. And I ran a basic regression, pretty good model fit, that found three predictors. So we have this, again, this believing the protection of the family is mostly the government's responsibility. So that's sort of the disposition of the coping, perhaps. Talking a great deal about community violence with their moms. This is probably indicative of that sort of engagement with the culture. And again, we have this popping up again, this lot R, this general kind of optimism that the moms with, you know, higher optimism were more likely to, controlling for these other factors, were more likely to approximate these cultural behaviors in their life. However, what's more interesting about cultural consonance, and this is actually why it's used in anthropology, is to connect with health outcomes. And what's been thought of in anthropology is that why people fail to live up these cultural models isn't oftentimes a matter of opinion. It's due to constraints in agency, autonomy, or resources. And what happens, what anthropologists have found, that those who kind of fail to kind of live up to these basic models sort of get reminded of that low consonance, they wouldn't call it that, through their social networks, their mundane interactions. And that creates sort of a negative feedback loop. And a very popular theory with Bill Dresser's work is that that cultural consonance, oftentimes used in really fundamental cultural models such as theories of success or theories of lifestyle attainment, that those are used for depression, psychological distress, even cardiovascular health. And what's kind of becoming popular is seeing that as a possible partial explanation of that socioeconomic gradient. So, again, community violence isn't as central as success or lifestyle, but I was kind of curious of what I've got here. So, taking that same cultural consonance measure, I picked one of the postpartum, six-month postpartum psychosocial health, and I picked LOT-R just because it seemed to come up a lot, and also it's been used a lot in pregnancy studies to predict active coping, better health outcomes and the like, and including the model race and education, which often comes up in those studies, and also including first trimester LOT-R just to kind of make sure I'm not getting some causal relationship. I have two predictors in a nice model of, you know, where the mom lived and her cultural consonance score. So this is really interesting in a sense, showing that, you know, it's all preliminary, I'm still working on it, but possibly showing that how well the mom is able to live up to certain standards during her pregnancy of, you know, what is considered a very salient threat has some predictive power of predicting her psychological health after the pregnancy, which then, you know, I'm not kind of drawing causal links, but, you know, that LOT-R then is used a lot for sort of long-term health, especially in interaction with the child. So this has obviously some limitations. The larger study I was working with, through their collection of the psychosocial measures, they had relationships with community health workers. And so it's very possible that those community health workers may have sort of changed the women, maybe given them better support that may have made these women different than the overall society, the generalizable issue. And there's still some sample size issues. There's no sample size problems with the cultural measurements, but definitely when I get into the regression, there I'm kind of touching these with kid gloves. Not, you know, it's, you know, it would be a bigger sample size to really make sure that that regression's strong. But there's a lot of really interesting implications for this research. Directly for the area of southeast Louisiana, I think this is very pertinent to send back to these WIC clinics. That if we know what the fault lines are, we know what the issues are, we know who the trusted sources of support and information are, and we know the possible risk factors. And this has actually come up in other WIC studies of looking at that, you know, advocating for more screening of the moms as they come in, that if we know beforehand of, you know, sort of at-risk moms, and if we know that there are certain problems in the community that are sort of culturally shared, perhaps we can sort of feed in culturally tailored information. And a bigger way of doing that intervention that I've really been captivated since I saw it last year at APHA, this is a study ongoing in New Haven. It's not published yet, but where essentially they're treating community violence like a disaster. And like a disaster, they're using RAND disaster resilience building techniques to go door to door to try to change behaviors. That it's not about, you know, the small community violence issue of your personal threat, but that just dealing with the threat, just as we in New Orleans deal with the threat of hurricanes, that sometimes the hurricanes don't come, but we need to be able to cope with that during hurricane season. So maybe that this sort of might be a peanut butter and jelly perfect synergy partnership between that sort of disaster level community violence intervention and a incorporation of cultural methodology. And broadly, this is an environmental health section, but I'm just very intrigued by this. I come from environmental health, but I really think that there is so much work to be done for a better incorporation of culture in all public health research that I think it needs to be a true partner at the table. And I think what it has to be done, and this is sort of advanced in the field of nursing, but of incorporating cultural knowledge at the beginning of these larger public health studies to really get a sense of where sort of the minefields are so that we can better tailor what specific questions we're going, what specific subpopulations we're looking at. So again, this is still, I'm still working on the analysis, but I'm really interested in just hearing your thoughts on this and any advice you may have on what I may be finding. But other than that, I want to acknowledge Anna Hassan, who ran the larger cohort study, Ari Shankar and Emily Harville, they helped with this, the larger dissertation committee, this also was a dissertation, and obviously the generosity of the NIEHS. So with that, I'll take any questions.